Well, hello, M5. Thank you so much for your kind attention, your kind follow-up, your kind words about the presentation that I had the chance to share with you a handful of weeks ago. It was so great getting to know your organization and hearing what's going on there and some of the things that you're doing to try to position yourself to be effective in the face of the uncertainty of creative work and dealing with clients who sometimes don't understand what we do. So we had a couple of questions in follow-up to the presentation. So I wanted to just take a little bit of time to answer those questions the best that I can without knowing specifics. First question is this. Hey there, really enjoyed your presentation. Thank you. You touched on ways to avoid losing trust. Wondering if you had any guidance on how to rebuild trust that may have been lost along the way. This is a phenomenal question. The unfortunate quick response is it is a long, laborious, and hyper-focused process. It's not something that's going to happen overnight. It's not something that can happen with a quick conversation or, you know, a couple of days of good behavior. If you have forfeited trust in some way with other people, it's a delicate and it's a nuanced process, but it's entirely possible. It is. The first step is to be candid about what happened, not just honest. Honesty is I'm telling you the truth. Candor is I'm telling you the full truth. We're talking, you know, all of the details about what happened, about how I felt, how you felt. And this goes beyond mere honesty. It involves acknowledging the specifics of the situation that led to the loss of trust. Now, by doing so, you're demonstrating that you fully understand the gravity of the situation. You're not trying to gloss over or minimize the impact of whatever happened. So this candor sets the stage for genuine reconciliation. So that's the first thing, is it's important to be candid, not just honest about what happened. Next, it's crucial to commit to doing whatever's necessary to show that you're trustworthy. It's important that if you're the person who violated trust, that you prove to the other person that you're willing to do what's necessary to show that you're trustworthy. Your actions, as they say, speak louder than words. So consistent, reliable behavior over time is essential to rebuilding trust. Now, you know that. That's the obvious thing, right? Okay, stop doing the thing that broke trust and start doing things that form trust with the other person. But it's not really just that simple. You have to make clear commitments and you have to follow through on them meticulously. You have to go the extra mile. This could involve setting up regular check-ins to talk about how things are going, being transparent in your communications. Anytime there's a potential for someone not trusting what you're saying, being transparent and candid in your communications. The goal is to demonstrate that you're serious about making amends and that your behavior will be different going forward. So that's really the second thing, is that you have to commit to doing whatever is necessary. But it's equally important, not just that you're doing those things, but that you ask the other person what they need to see in order to feel that trust is being rebuilt. This shows respect for their perspective, and it acknowledges that trust is always a two-way street, right? So, you know, their needs might include more frequent communication, more frequent update, involvement in decision-making, or just time to see consistent behavior. So by asking and then acting on their input, you create a collaborative approach to rebuilding trust, which can be more effective than just a one-sided effort. I'm going to do the right things moving forward. Trust me, right? When it's a collaborative effort, then you're showing the other person that you truly care about what, not just what you think will rebuild trust, but what they need from you in order to rebuild trust. And then finally, one final thing is, remember that rebuilding trust is your responsibility, not theirs. And this is something I see over and over again in leaders where they say, well, I'm doing all the right things, but they still don't trust me, right? Well, sorry, but if you were the one who breached trust, that is not your process to manage. It's theirs. Rebuilding trust is your responsibility, but they're the ones who are bridging that gap. Now, if you feel like it's not, if their assessment is not fair, that's part of the candor conversation, right? But remember that the onus is on you to prove that you are worthy of their trust again. This means being patient. It means understanding that regaining trust can take time. It's about showing through consistent and transparent action that past mistakes won't be repeated and that you value the relationship enough to put in the necessary effort. So just remember that rebuilding trust is your responsibility, not theirs. And it may not feel fair all the time. And if you're being taken advantage of in that process, that's a part of that candid conversation that needs to be had. But just remember that it's your responsibility. So be candid about what happened, not just honest, but candid. Commit to trustworthy actions. Seek input from the other person about what they need, because that's the primary thing. And then understand that the responsibility to rebuild trust lies with you. So this, you know, multifaceted approach can help restore and even strengthen relationships that have been lost over time, but it does take time. We all know this, right? But just remember that it will take time, and the process may not always seem perfectly fair, but that's what has to happen when trust has been breached. So hopefully this is helpful to you. Okay, so the second question, do you have any advice for building creative processes on dispersed teams? Oh my goodness. Really? Are you really dealing with a dispersed team? It's the first time I've ever heard of anyone dealing with a remote or dispersed team. We have people working remotely in different physical offices, and creativity can sometimes suffer as a result of not having that physical contact to spark spontaneous ideas. How do we set up structures to foster creative sharing? It seems artificial. How do we do it authentically? Okay, a couple of things. So first of all, building creative processes on dispersed teams is a challenge. It just is, period. We are learning a new way to work. We're learning a new way of being human. But it is possible to foster an environment where creativity will thrive. One effective approach is to facilitate asynchronous ideation and asynchronous idea sharing. Okay, so you mentioned you have people at different offices. Well, that implies that you probably have groups of people or clusters of people at different offices, right? So can you facilitate in-person training with those clusters of people and then come together virtually or, you know, on a virtual meeting, a virtual brainstorm to share what those individual offices came up with as a way to almost inspire competition, which is kind of fun, right? So is there a way that you can create small pockets of in-person creating? Or if not at remote offices, can you create small pockets of creating remotely? So have 2 to 3 people remotely on Zoom instead of having an entire team of 10, 12, 15 people trying to get their word into a virtual meeting, which is almost impossible. What if you have small pockets of 2, 3 people generating ideas together, and then those teams come back together in a larger meeting and they report back as teams as opposed to individuals? What this does is, A, it allows you over time to figure out who tends to work really well together in these virtual environments, as you see ideas kind of being vetted in that process. And B, it minimizes the amount of clutter and awkwardness when you have fast twitch people sharing 1,000 ideas in a virtual meeting, and you have slow twitch people who might need a little more time to process, who always feel like they're being pushed to the back because there's never room for them to share their ideas because there are so many people. So how could you create pockets of in-person or even virtual collaborative creativity and then come back together and share those ideas and then refine those ideas in the context of team or push it back out to those small pockets again or create new small groups of people to refine the ideas, right? And then come back together. And I think that alternating, instead of planning a meeting and expecting everything to happen in a 60 or 90 minute meeting, plan a series of smaller meetings with smaller groups of people doing work on their own to come back together and then go back alone and then come back together. It takes more time, it takes more planning, it takes more strategy. But by doing this, you're actually creating, I think, a more effective environment in a virtual setting than just having everybody sit there and stare at each other on Zoom and a couple of really loud voices share a bunch of ideas. That's always really, really challenging, okay? A second way to do the asynchronous thing is, and I'm sure you have this, but to have some sort of tool where ideas can be shared and liked and built upon virtually, and then just create the expectation that, hey, everybody is to contribute to this by Tuesday at 4 p.m. That's just part of your job, right, is to do that. So that would be another thing I would encourage you to do is to ensure that you have some place where people can be constantly, consistently updating, sharing, liking, you know, commenting on ideas, sharing stimulus, keeping a place, a central place where people can communicate about things in an asynchronous way. Because you know, you really don't have those hallway conversations. You don't have those little pop-up, you know, sessions that often, I mean, you and I both know that when you're working in an office, often the best ideas come from just little casual nudges, little casual conversations, or somebody brings something up and says, hey, have you ever thought about this? I haven't really thought about that, but that's really interesting. Let's take it to the team. We'll talk about it. So having a virtual hallway where people can just share stuff they're reading, they can share ideas that they like, or you know, little prompts that they had, little bits of inspiration that are striking them right now. Keeping a place like a virtual hallway for that can be really helpful to an organization. And then, you know, just encouraging a culture of open communication and psychological safety is crucial. And we talked about this a little bit, but team members need to feel comfortable sharing ideas, even when they think they're bad ideas. You know, sometimes when you're in a room, it's easy to share a bad idea because you know that 2 seconds later, everything's going to be passed over. People are going to forget about it. They'll move on. Maybe people will laugh and it's fine. But when you do that in a virtual space, or if you have, you know, sort of a place where you're sharing ideas, it's going to sit there for a while. And you don't know always how people are responding, or people are sometimes less likely to respond to an idea that they think is terrible virtually, like online, maybe in that virtual hallway, as opposed to just sort of like maybe cracking a joke in a meeting and kind of moving on, and everybody has a laugh and you have a laugh and everything's fine, right? So we need to create psychological safety where people can feel comfortable sharing ideas, even more so in a virtual space than in an in-person space. So by combining asynchronous idea sharing, those pulses, structured but authentic interactions, a supportive culture, psychological safety, you can build a robust creative process. But the key, I believe, in my experience, is not trying to accomplish everything in a big team meeting, but instead creating a series of small team breakout meetings, and then everybody comes back and shares their ideas, and then you break out again, everybody comes back and shares their ideas, so that you're not depending on that one big, long 90-minute brainstorming session to generate all of your ideas. Not everybody works that way, and I wrote about that in Herding Tigers. You have fast-twitch people and slow-twitch people, people who thrive on those kinds of meetings and people who really need more time and process in order to come up with ideas. Those are the slow-twitch people. So you need to create a process that honors and values both of those kinds of creative minds. All right? Hey, hopefully this was helpful. These were the only two questions we had, but hopefully this was some clarifying insight into those two questions. Again, I'm excited for you. I'm excited for your organization, and I can't wait to see what happens ahead for you. All right. Thanks so much.